I accepted it when I saw the schedule, and they told me this is what I was talking. So yeah, sorry, it's the last talk of the day. I hope some of you can stay awake for this. So as was mentioned, I'm going to be talking about a new method that we've developed to try to detect selection in populations of mixed ancestry. So following on a bit from what Etienne spoke about earlier. And I'm going to describe an application of this method to a large-scale data resource that we had access to that had about 7,000 data from 7,000 Latin Americans from these five different countries. These are the various sampling locations here. And this was part of the Candela project, which is headed by Andres Ruiz Linares. And so the idea is that we wanted to test for selection kind of locally in each one of these different groups, so separately in each of these groups. It's an allele frequency-based approach, so we tested each of about 600,000 SNPs individually. This was published earlier this year, and this is all work done by Pasteur's own Javier Mendoza-Revilla, so if you have any problems with it, you can talk to him. And just to say that, so the Americas have been quite fruitful for studying selection. There's been lots of previous work in this area. Some of these signals might be a bit debated, but there have been reports of selection to do with things like diets, living at high elevations, skin pigmentation, and even arsenic exposure. Okay, so for my talk, I'm going to spend most of the time describing the methodology, probably, and then I'll then go through some of the key results from the Latin American selection scan. Okay, so this is an admixture plot of our cohorts, and so our individuals, of course, are of mixed ancestry here. They're Brazilians, Chileans, Colombians, Mexicans, and Peruvians. They all have ancestry from these three different sources, and so we wanted an approach to detect selection that could cope with these highly admixed populations. Okay, so there's some methods that have come out to do that, so some of which Etienne spoke about. There's this Ohana technique that came out recently as well from Fernando Racimo's group. But our focus was we wanted to be able to determine automatically whether selection occurred prior to admixture, and if so, in which source. And here we'll be focusing mainly on the Native American source, or if it occurred post-admixture, by which I mean it kind of affects all individuals equally, regardless of their ancestry proportions. Okay, so I take that to mean that it probably occurred post-admixture. All right, so what does the technique look like? So you've seen a tree like this earlier from Etienne. So for simplicity, let's just assume that there's only two populations that mixed. So I'll drop the Africans from this, but it works the same way if you include the African populations. And so say that there's a group A star, which is a native group that intermixed with a European group B star, and that led to the admixed population C that we sample today. And we also sample A and B, which are proxies to A star and B star. And so in this study, what we used as a proxy, which is quite important, we used Iberians to represent the European ancestry, and so that should be a pretty good proxy, probably for colonial era migrants into the Americas. Well, for A, we didn't have access to too much native data, so what we did is we combined information from about 19 groups to get A. And so what we're sort of testing, when we look at each one of these countries, is evidence for selection in this local region relative to this sort of average or maybe ancestral native group. Okay, so the way the model works, so let's let alpha be the proportion of DNA that C inherited from A star, S is the selection strength, and FC is the, so this is a SNP-based test, so FC is the allele frequency in population C at this SNP, and similarly FA and FB are the allele frequencies at A and B. And so following Matheson and some other work that Etienne mentioned, we're assuming under neutrality, so if S equals zero, that the expected frequency of C here can just be described as a mixture of the frequencies in A star and B star, where the mixture coefficients are the ancestry it received from those two groups. All right, and furthermore, we'll replace the stars with the data that we actually sampled, so the surrogate data. Okay, and then from this, again under neutrality, what we assume is that FC, so this frequency follows a beta distribution with mean equal to this expectation, and a variance term delta that's meant to sort of measure genome-wide the deviation from this expectation. Okay, so we use all SNPs to estimate this parameter. We can talk later about whether we think that's a good idea, and I kind of think it's not a good idea now, but it's what I did for the results here. And that's supposed to be capturing things like how good of a proxy this is for this source, and if there's been a lot of drift since the admixture event. So at least that's the idea. Okay, and then we assume that the allele count in C, so the count of the particular allele, follows a binomial distribution that depends on this parameter and also the sample, the number of samples that you've observed. And so this follows from the Balding-Nichols. This makes a beta binomial model for which you can then calculate a p-value to test the null hypothesis of neutrality. Okay, so low p-values in this setting is supposed to be evidence of selection. The issue is that we don't know if it could indicate selection along this red branch here separating A and A star, and or on this blue branch separating B star and B, and or on this purple branch, which is sense admixture. So we wanted to be able to distinguish amongst those possibilities. So what we did is we calculated, or we derived the expected frequency given selection in each of these three different cases. Okay, so I did this under a multiplicative model because it turns out the maths are easier in the way allele frequencies accumulate over generations. And so here S, the selection strength, is roughly equivalent to the sum of selection coefficients across generations throughout the period of selection. Okay, so we calculated these three formulas, and we'll estimate S in each one of them. And I'll kind of show you what these look like for an example, rather than just going through the equation. So say this is the expected frequency of C here. If you were to stratify these individuals by their proportion of ancestry from A, okay? And so FA is the frequency in population A, FB is the frequency in B, and the data is expected in the admixed population to follow this neutral black line, so this black line under neutrality, whereby individuals with all of their ancestry from A, their frequency should simply match that of population A, and individuals with all of their ancestry from B should match the frequency in B. Okay, now in contrast, if there is selection on this red branch, so splitting A and A star, you'll get this deviation from neutrality. And here I used a selection coefficient of 1, which again, this is cumulative, so this would be equivalent to say if you had a 0.01 selection strength over 100 generations, say that would give this value. And so you get this deviation from neutrality, and this deviation is highest in individuals that get most of their ancestry from A. Okay, so that should make intuitive sense because it's only happened on this branch, and so individuals with the most ancestry from that source will show the strongest signal of selection, and individuals with no ancestry from there will actually follow neutrality. Okay, and you get a similar thing if you look at B, except for the opposite. So now individuals with all of their ancestry from B have the strongest deviation from neutrality. And then the final case, and so these are all the same selection coefficients of 1, if you have selection post-admixture, you get this shift in purple where everybody shifted away from the neutral line, sort of regardless or at least more loosely affiliated with their admixture fractions from the two populations. Okay, so the idea is to try to look at the data and see which of these different models it fits best. And we do that using likelihood ratio statistics, which here is equivalent to using AIC. And again, in each case of selection, we estimate these selection coefficients. Okay, so we can do some simulations, or Javier did some simulations, to look at how well we do. So he simulated selection occurring post-admixture, or in the Native Americans only, or in the Europeans only. And he simulated data to try to match our 5 different cohorts here. And we matched in terms of things like sample size, ancestry fractions like this, and also how well we think the native proxy mimics the actual native source, which seems to vary across groups. Okay, so all of those things affect the power of the method. I'll just point out some things. So Brazilians are in orange here, and so we can see that they've got pretty decent-ish power if selection occurs post-admixture, or in the Europeans, well, they has almost no power if selection occurred in the Native Americans. And that's because they have, in this sample, very little Native American ancestry. Okay, so that affects your power to actually see these signals. I should also point out that people that are familiar with these plots, this is the selection strength assuming 2 copies of the selected allele, while many of these plots are assuming 1 copy. And so these might be about 2 times higher than you're used to seeing. Okay, then we can also ask, That's how well we can classify or identify that there is selection, but then we want to know how well can we actually classify it into these different categories. So these are the same simulations, so you got selection occurring post-admixture, or just in the native source, or just in the Europeans. And here in these columns, so these rows are different selection strengths. These columns are whether we classify the admixture as, the selection as occurring post-admixture, or just in the natives, just in the Europeans, just in the Africans, or unclassified. Okay, and so the take-home here is that if selection strength is not very high, we typically cannot make a call. We can't classify it very clearly. But as selection strength gets higher, we can classify it. So we can tell that post-admixture selection is post-admixture. Selection in the natives is selection in the natives, and same with the Europeans. And we very rarely get it wrong. Okay, so in general, we can't always make a call. But when we do make a call, we're pretty confident that it's correct, at least based on these simulations. We can also compare to different approaches that are out there. So Ohana was mentioned earlier. So what we did is we used some simulations from that paper. We mimicked them where you've got a African population, European, East Asians, and Native Americans. The natives and the Europeans mixed to form a Mexican-like population. And then we sample these four populations at the bottom, so not the natives, and all of the selection occurs in the native branch, so it's only in the native source. Okay, and then we ran Ohana, we ran our approach, which is called DAPMIX. And so the way Ohana works, for those that don't know it, is it uses an admixture-like algorithm to first classify all your sampled individuals into some number of ancestry components, K. And so, for example, here's the results of use K=4, or K=3, and then it tests for selection between those different ancestry components. Okay, so it's gonna have the most power. So all of the selection signal here is in the Mexicans, so they're the only ones that carry the selection signal out of all of these sample groups. So it's gonna have the most power when it kind of assigns that to its own component, because that's the one carrying the signature of selection. And you can even specify that you only wanna test that component. And if you do that, that gives actually the highest power overall. It's this gray line here. In these simulations, we're just under that in the blue line. We do slightly better than the general model of Ohana if you just don't specify which component the selection is in. And just to point out, we do notably better than if you were to use the wrong K. If you use K=3, you don't separate out the Mexicans into their own component, and so it drastically decreases power. Okay, but overall, we basically do the same if you run Ohana correctly. And we can also look at post-admixture selection as well. So this same plot was shown by Etienne. We stole some of their simulations where they simulated post-admixture selection. So they had a population mixing, two populations mixing 70 generations ago, and then selection occurring from then in only the admixed group. Okay, and so we compare that to Ohana again. Here, Ohana would have the most power in K=3 if it put the admixed group all into its own component, because that's where the whole selection signal is. And so it's got slightly reduced power here, I think, even if you test this right, correct-ish gray component, because it's not entirely representing the admixed population. Okay, if it had been put into its own component, it would have more power. And then if K=2, it's got very little power because it correctly identifies that this group is a 50-50 mixture of these two components, but then it can't really test for selection between those components because the whole selection signal is carried in both in that particular population. Okay, so we do a bit better overall. We also compared it to local ancestor deviations. Okay, so again, this is if you try to assign segments to either population on the left or the population on the right, and ask if there's excess ancestry from one of them, which would indicate selection. We do considerably better than that, and we think that's because the ancestor deviations maybe not working very well here, because the admixture is old. So maybe if it was more recent, that might do a bit better. Okay, so overall, we kind of do similar-ish to other approaches. I think the advantage is the fact that it can automatically determine whether it's post-admixture selection or selection in one of the different source populations. Okay, so I'll spend the rest of my time talking about the Latin American selection scan and some of the things that we see. What we did is again, tested each country separately. So we're looking for local signals in each of these countries. We did two analyses. So the results that I'll show you are just analyses of each country, all individuals in each country. But earlier work that we've done has shown that there's substructure in the native ancestry in these groups, and so we did some supplementary analyses where, for example, if you look at Peruvians, about half of them match their ancestry to an Andes Piedmont-like native group, and the rest to a Quechua-like native group. And so we split individuals matching ancestries to those two sources and tested them separately to make sure that our signals that we saw here still remained. And so again, this is to try to account for population substructure influencing our results. Okay, so here's a heat map for just the Mexican cohorts. We get a series of hits. I think across all cohorts, we get about 40 to 50 hits overall. Just under half of them were able to classify as being post-admixture or selection. Here again, we're focusing on the native group. I'll just point out some of the signals. So we detect selection in the HLA region, which others have found as well in Mexicans, using local ancestry deviation techniques. So suggesting that selection has occurred following admixture and that these populations are keeping the African DNA around because it's adaptive in some way. And so here's an example SNP from this region. And these orange dots are the allele frequencies in Mexicans if you stratify them by their proportion of native ancestry. Okay, so the data is these orange dots. Neutrality is this black dot and these gray lines here. And so it's clearly shifted from neutrality. The red is the fit of our model, assuming adaptation occurred only in the native source. While purple is if adaptation occurred post-admixture. The kind of take home here is that the purple and red are overlapping too much. We can't really tell them apart. So here we're not able to make a call about whether it was selection prior to or after admixture. But we do see this signal in nearly all of our cohorts. So up here, this is the HLA region. Each of these different colors is one of the different countries. And so we see signals in four of our five cohorts, all except Brazil, which had the most, which is almost entirely just European ancestry, so we may not expect to see a signal there. Most of the time, we can't classify the admixture, but for a few groups, I think the Colombians, we are able to tell that it, or there's stronger evidence of it being post-admixture selection. And indeed, we did some local ancestry inference techniques on that, this, and it suggests that the African ancestry is increasing in these regions, consistent with other people have found. And in fact, you could look at our allele frequencies in this region. So this is these are different SNPs in HLA where we find a hit. That's what each row is. Our expected frequency under neutrality is in gray here, while the observed frequency is in white. And the observed frequencies are shifting towards the African frequency in green, most prominently seen here in the Colombians. And so we do think that this might be an example of Africans bringing adaptive alleles in HLA and those keeping around in these populations by allowing them to adapt, presumably, to infectious disease pressures. Another signal, so this is a Manhattan for the Peruvian cohort. This has our strongest signal overall, which is on chromosome 10. And here we see very strong evidence that the model best fits a scenario where the adaptation occurred in the native population only. Okay, so this is adaptation in the natives. And so it fits the red much better than it fits this purple one. Okay, and then Javier did some great work kind of interrogating these signals in publicly available repositories. So for example, he looked in GWAS catalogs. So these are GWAS results from UK Biobank. So it's not the right population, it's Europeans. But nonetheless, in this hit region, you do get associations with things like cholesterol. He also looked in GTEx, and our lead SNP here is significantly associated with the expression of the gene HKDC1 within this region in adipose and liver tissue. So HKDC1 has been previously associated, or variants have been associated in this region with glucose metabolism in pregnant women, and also weight at birth. There's also another gene in this region, STOX1, where we get a signal here. A recent study from Andres Marino Estrada's group has shown that there's a marginal association between our hits and a hit in the STOX1 gene for individuals with preeclampsia, so Peruvians with preeclampsia. Okay, so preeclampsia is known, or has been suggested, it's been linked to living at high elevations. We see this particular signal most strongly in the ancestral group that's related to this Andean population. And so it's possible that this signal relates to adaptation to pregnancy complications due to living at high elevations. And some other signals that we see, not surprisingly, based on other selection scans, we see lots of signals involved in immunity. Here are three examples. So these are two Chilean results and a Peruvian again. For some of them, we see selection occurring in the natives only. Some of them, we see evidence post-admixture. Again, Javier can interrogate some databases, so including a GWAS of white blood cell counts, and you get hits in these regions for these SNPs. And also, some of these SNPs control the, they're associated with the expression of natural killer and T cells for genes within this region. And so these are plausible adaptations related to immunity occurring both post-admixture, well, sometimes post-admixture, and sometimes just in the native source. Okay, so that's just a few examples. I'll just go into conclusions. So to summarize, AdaptMix is the name of this program that we've developed. It's designed to leverage populations where you have varying admixture proportions and try to determine automatically whether selection occurred before admixture, by which I mean it affects mainly or most prominently people with the most ancestry from that particular group, or after admixture, by which I mean it affects all admixed individuals kind of regardless of their ancestry proportions. And then we described an application, a particular first application that we've done of this, looking at Latin Americans in the Candela Consortium, and we find, as of others, that there is evidence of selection in MHC that's likely post-admixture, probably related to pathogen pressures. And then you had other immune-related adaptation that we found, both occurring sometimes before and sometimes after European contact. And so adaptation to pathogens has been important throughout kind of the history of the Americas, which again probably isn't surprising. And our strongest signal overall, which we found in Peruvians, is in a region that has been linked to preeclampsia and glucose levels in pregnant women. Okay, so that's all I have. I just want to thank again Javier, who really did all of the work, all of the Candela Consortium volunteers and some people involved in that project. The software, if people are interested and I want to do some bug testing, it's available here, so please use it. And then I'd also like to thank a few other people in my group and my funders, which were the Wellcome Trust and Royal Society. And thank you. I think you're done for the day after questions.